Blog Talk Radio.
Aloha. Welcome to Talking Pictures. I'm your host, Paul Booth. Thank you for being here. As always, this is my favorite thing to do. And we always get new listeners, so I'm going to try to learn to stop saying how much I love being here, but it's just, I love being here. We're going to have a great guest today who's got a new film festival coming to Los Angeles that Filmmaker Magazine actually did a great article about. So if you listen to the podcast right below there in the bio, click on that Film Festival Magazine or Filmmaker Magazine, a very legitimate publication. And again, one note I'm going to say to the audience, I do have a fan running in the studio. There's a heat wave hitting where we record. And I would much rather, unfortunately, I was a sound guy in film school, and it makes me nuts that there's a fan running, but I would rather have that than just pass out from heat while the mic's running. So today we're going to talk with festival director Stephen Elliott, and once he joins us, he'll discuss this anything he wants to add to his bio. The new festival coming to Los Angeles this weekend, Saturday, July 30th, is the Rumpus Lo-Fi Los Angeles Film Festival. It has Stephen's film, Adderall, and it has a great film called Creedmoria, which we've reviewed. And we had Alicia Slimmer, a wonderful filmmaker. She was a guest. She stopped by. Any Creedmoria fans out there, Alicia may be stopping by again sometime soon to talk music with us. Great, superb soundtrack in that movie. That was one of those where you just kind of walked out going, wow, holy S word. So I'm really excited about this festival because we're always happy with the here at the show when a new festival or a premiere, or if we're blessed enough, we have a few filmmakers that have let us cover their film before it comes out, and we're so fortunate for that. And we appreciate that always. So to be able to talk with a festival director here that's, you know, sharing his vision with us and taking that time is a really cool thing. It's actually one of the biggest goals of the show. I wanted to also recommend to those of you Star Trek Beyond. Obviously did well at the box office this weekend. Not that that's what makes a difference. But please get out and see that. Support it. And okay, it's a shameless play. A buddy of mine did a lot of the effects on it. All right, here we go. I think we have Stephen. Are you with us?
I am.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Anytime. Once you come on the show as a guest, you're always welcome back. So I let people know about the festival and that it's coming up this Saturday.
Great.
So let's hear your side of the story.
Well, yeah, I put together the Rumpus. You know, we put together the Rumpus Lo-Fi Los Angeles Film Festival. It was really a result of a long, fairly exhaustive article, investigation that I wrote about film festivals a few months ago. Because when I started sending my third movie out to film festivals and getting some rejections and not really understanding how they worked, I wanted to look into film festivals and try to understand them better, because I'm such an out, even though, you know, I've made three movies, I'm really an outsider in the film community. I don't really know a lot of filmmakers or anything like that. And I tend to do things on my own and in non-traditional ways. And when I started researching the film festivals, and you know, when I want to learn about something, I usually write an article about it because that allows me to then, you know, talk to the people who know stuff, which is, you know, I'm sure you do with your radio show, right? Like when you're curious about something, you just invite the person onto the show and then you can find out. And so I started interviewing programmers and over 150 directors whose films have played at a variety of film festivals. And what I found out some really strange things, things I didn't expect to find out, you know, primarily that people that were paying submission fees to go to film festivals weren't getting in. And that film festivals were programming almost exclusively movies that had gotten fee waivers. Or had been invited to the festival for one reason or another. And so it just inspired me, you know, when I realized, I thought, you know, this is a really expensive game, you know, cost thousands of dollars to apply to festivals. A lot of them cost $100 just to apply. And the game's kind of rigged. And I thought, you know, we're just going to put on our own film festival. And then because I was in Los Angeles for the summer, then we had to do it in Los Angeles and we wanted to be the premiere of After Adderall. So we had to put it together fairly quickly. And then I contacted some of the directors of the movies that I was really curious about that I had come across while writing the article, invited them, put together a couple of panels, and now we're doing this big film festival this Saturday at the brewery in Los Angeles.
That's excellent. While we're on it, you want to throw out the website there while we're...
Yeah, it's just therumpus.net/filmfestival. And
okay,
the festival starts... Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to. Go ahead.
No, just, you know, the festival is just, it's just a one-day festival. Originally, I thought it would be maybe more than one day, but it's so hard to put on a film festival, you know, that I felt we better keep it simple for the first year. And so, you know, it starts at 11:30 in the morning with the first movie, Search Engines. And then S&M Sally at 1:30, then a panel on film festivals with a bunch of film festival programmers at 3:30, and then Creedmoor at 5 o'clock, and then a festival with authors whose books have been made in the movies, you know, Janet Fitch and Anthony Swofford, who did Jarhead at 7. And then at 8:30, the world premiere of After Adderall.
Oh, that's excellent. I know I'd seen the lineup. You also have a Facebook page, right? Because I saw it on Facebook, so we might as well
hit
that.
Exactly.
Well, cause
I don't have the exact address for the Facebook page.
Oh, okay. they probably just search the Rumpus Lo-Fi.
Yeah, exactly. Search over Rumpus Lo-Fi Film Festival, and I'm sure it'll come right up.
Okay. Well, I really like this idea, and I first off want to let you know, because I didn't tell you when we spoke a little while ago. We're not a show that tells the guest anything they want to hear or, you know, blows smoke, as the old Hollywood saying is. I really admire what you're doing because we have the good fortune as a show. And then I also, for 5 years, just for movie magazines and newspapers, got to cover festivals. And so I got to see kind of the dynamic of, you know, and I'm also a filmmaker myself who's played a lot of festivals. So I've gotten to be on both sides. And it's really interesting. Like you said, there's so many facets to it. And another thing that you probably came across was that, you know, the same film will play every festival you go to.
That's one of the things.
Yeah.
It makes it harder to, like, doing this research. One of the things I found out was it's harder to get into the Chicago Film Festival if you pay the submission fee. Your chances of getting into the Chicago Film Festival are actually lower than your chances of getting into South by Southwest, because Chicago is just programming movies that have already played at bigger festivals or that were made by alumni of the festival. People that they know and that they give the waivers to, which is not to say that the movies aren't great or the festivals are not programming good movies. It's just simply, if you can't find a way to get a waiver, a fee waiver to apply to the festival, you're not going to get in. you're not going to get into Chicago. They don't program movies that pay the fee. Even the fee they charge is $100 to apply.
Right, right.
You know, it's not that the festivals are corrupt, or that the movies they're playing are not the best movies, or not. You know, it's not. I'm not saying that they're programming movies that don't deserve to be programmed. You know, it's just there's this idea. It's like, who do you put first, the filmmaker or the audience? And if you're saying, okay, we're going to put only the audience first, we're going to only program the movies that we think are the very best movies, a lot of times those are movies that are already embedded by really big festivals, you know, that's fine. But if you're charging the filmmakers a really large sum of money, then what's your obligation to the filmmakers? Like, are you morally obligated to program a certain number from the blind submission pile if you've charged really large submission fees? I kind of think you do. I kind of think if you are not going to program a significant number of people from the blind submission pile, then you shouldn't be charging high submission fees.
Well, right, and we both know as filmmakers that the worst time for coming up with more funds is at the end. So it's really a catch-22 because, you know, when you've cleared the air of how your cinematographer deferred a week, or you ran up a credit card, or your investor's going to get paid 6 months late, all the wonderful things that happen when you make an indie film. But yeah, I like what you're saying, and with the programmers, because of course everyone will remain nameless, but there's some festivals out there that actually have a set aside X amount of films that not the premiere, but they will not pick them if they've played like 8 festivals. They want stuff that has, maybe it's the second screening, or maybe it is the, you know, Southern California premiere, but they're not necessarily into something that's been cleaning house all year for. And some festivals have a rule where, I remember when a festival would have like a 2-year run. Now festivals have where, like, if you played the spring and fall season, they won't take you.
Different for each festival.
Right.
You know, I mean, yeah. So that's the thing. It's hard to draw like really broad conclusions about every festival because they're all different. Like Tukulorus, I found, didn't have a very good track record of programming movies that paid the submission fee. But then I realized Tukulorus also doesn't charge a very high submission fee. You know, they don't charge $25. To where I'm like, well, okay, you don't program that many people from the blind submissions pile. You know, you're mostly programming people that you've either given a fee waiver to or have invited. But at least you're not charging an egregious sum. So there's kind of like different levels. But, you know, in the article that we published on the Rumpus, the data set for each festival runs right next to the article. So you're reading the article and it sounds hard to believe. And then you see the data, it's right next to you. 15 movies that we profiled that were in Tribeca, none of them paid a submission fee to apply, you know, and et cetera, for each festival. And I think there's something like 40 festivals are tabulated. And the statistics are crazy. And then some festivals came out great where, you know, Slam Dance programs, you have to pay the submission fee to apply to Slam Dance. That's just the way it is. Same with Dances with Films, which has actually turned out to be one of the best festivals I looked into. And then CineQuest also had a great record. And, you know, it's just such a weird thing because it's not that Sundance is a bad festival, you know, and Tribeca also plays a lot of great movies and also champions a lot of diverse screens. A lot of times they're giving fee waivers to people because they're trying to find diversity and they're trying to find lower income filmmakers. Like they're actively seeking these things, you know.
Oh, yes, yes, as I was saying,
the game is a
budget can't be over, or yeah, no, I that's can you just tell us where we could. This sounds like a fantastic article. Could you tell us what we have to Google to read this article? This sounds brilliant.
Yeah. Well, it's you know, there's a direct, it, you know, this thing went like wildfire all over the internet. I mean, it really blew up. It was, you know, the IndieWire did a whole article about this article, and Movie Maker Magazine did as well. Like, it really, and there were, and actually came up on a bunch of panels in film festivals this year. So it really went everywhere. But the, you know, the name of the article is The Great Film Festival Swindle. And there's a link to it. There's a link to it from the Rumpus Film Festival page. So you can, you know, go there and click through, or you can just Google The Great Film Festival Swindle.
Well,
I mean, I've actually, you know, I've been a writer for a long time. I've written 7 books. I've written for, you know, GQ and Spin Magazine and all these places. I've never done this much research for an article. This is my most investigative journalism I've ever done. And it was because when the data started presenting itself, I was shocked. I couldn't believe that that was accurate. You know, so I kept, you know, finding my way to more and more filmmakers, and they would refer more and more filmmakers, and I collect more and more data, and the data just kept coming, saying the same thing. And then the film festival programmers were livid because, of course, this affects their bottom line. Now people are not going to want to pay as much to apply to certain festivals. And they denied it, and I asked them for help getting more data. They wouldn't provide help. The only festivals that were helpful were like the Brooklyn Film Festival and then Dances with Films and Slam Dance were really helpful because they had nothing to hide. But the other guys, you know, the article is only about feature-length narrative movies. And they would say, you know, they would give me this other data about how many of the movies that they played had paid the submission fee, but it would be shorts and it would be documentaries. And I was like, this is not even what the article is about. And you're trying to confuse the issue. And somebody from the programmers from Lower East Side Film Festival started arguing in the comments of the article. And it just, they just looked so awful. You know, like,
wow, that's interesting. That's interesting that you say that, because my friend of mine's film opened the Lower East Side Film Festival this year.
Oh, what was your friend's film?
It's called Art of the Prank.
That's a documentary.
It's a documentary, and it is an actual superb film. I'll tell a friend I don't like their film.
The movies that play at the Lower East Side Festival are great movies. The only problem is that you know, you're charging $75 for a submission fee, and you're only programming 3 narrative features this year. 2 of those didn't pay a submission fee. So you're competing for 1 spot. Like, if you knew that, would you be willing to pay $75 to submit your low budget movie, knowing that there's only 1 spot available for narrative features that pay a submission fee? You know, I just want the festivals to be transparent about how many movies are programming that pay the submission fee. What percentage? You know, so you know, like, okay, if they're programming 90% of movies that don't pay a submission fee, then I've got to find a way to get a waiver. I've got to find a way to get in that pile of people that didn't pay a submission fee, or it's not worth it to me to apply.
Right. Well, what you were saying about Chicago and they do a great thing where they have a student film festival and the winners play the big festival. Mm. But I had a friend who had a film in Sundance. She herself even called that a fluke and still thinks it's a surreal dream. But she didn't get into Chicago, not that she expected it, but she thought that Chicago, and I mentioned this because what you said, would be much easier than Sundance.
No, Chicago's, you know, like, harder than Sundance.
Yeah, because she expected the rejection from Sundance.
Yeah, Chicago sends programmers to all the big festivals, and they choose the movies they like, and those are the movies they program. If they haven't chosen you, your chances of getting in are extremely low, because they're basically programming from movies that they've already seen, that they've scouted. That's how they choose their movies. Which, you know, to be fair, is how I chose the movies for the Rumpus Film Festival. You know, these are movies I was interested in that I came across while writing the article. The difference is I didn't charge anybody a submission fee. So we didn't profit from filmmakers. Because the way most film festivals are working is that basically the losers are throwing a party for the winners. You know, they're charging all this money to filmmakers, especially the low-budget filmmakers. You know, they're basically exploiting your dreams. You know, you never go broke selling somebody their dreams back. And they're taking all that money and they're, you know, they're throwing a party for people they were, they always knew they were going to program. You know, and we didn't do that. And if you don't charge submission fees, then you're not obligated to program anybody. If you don't charge submission fees, program whoever you want. You know, program for whatever reason you want. You know, but don't charge a bunch of submission fees and then only program people that didn't pay submission fees.
No, we don't have to. You can, I'm not going to, but because you've been a part of films that have played known festivals, what mm-hmm. is that like for you that you've kind of seen the other side of the coin as well?
Well, it's just, you know, I mean, it's funny, right? Because my first movie premiered at Berlin, and then it also played at the San Francisco Film Festival. That movie, you know, is a $750,000 movie that had a lot of big stars, had James Franco and Heather Graham and a lot of people like that. And I didn't think about it at the time, but we didn't pay any submission fees for film festivals. And I didn't know that that mattered. You know, my second movie was a Kickstarter movie, $200,000, and it didn't get in any festivals. So I thought, oh, man, you know, maybe this movie's just not that good. It's a really, my second movie is really dark. It's called Happy Baby. It's really dark. And I thought, you know, this is a hard movie. You got to watch it the whole way through. You got to pay attention. You can't, like, check your phone or go to the bathroom. You're not going to understand the movie. So I thought the movie itself was a failure. And then the third movie, after Adderall, I knew it was good. It's so funny. It's so easy to watch. It's such an interesting topic, you know. And it didn't get into a couple places, and I was like, there's something weird here, you know. And then I wish I had done the research earlier. Because, you know, on Happy Baby, we spent, I think, maybe $3,000 applying to film festivals and never got into any because we didn't know the game was rigged completely differently. I would have written the festivals asking for waivers. I would have explained the movie to them and why they should give me a waiver. And I would have just had a completely different strategy, you know, if I'd known how the game was played.
Right, right. Well, because you... And then also your experience as a writer, you've been part of things that played festivals. So this is really interesting because – go ahead.
No, just like, you know, the Adderall Diaries, which is the movie based on my book, that movie, you know, the big budget movie with a lot of stars, and they didn't pay any festival fees.
That's – yeah, and, you know, this is – I really appreciate your time, Stephen, because as I – when you were speaking of research, I never take anyone for granted, and we don't separate guests here. When you talk about submission fees, our version is that, you know, we love that our last guest was a 14-year-old girl making her first documentary, and then we have someone today who's written books and sold screenplays and directed his own films. So the seed of this show is that I was tired of labeling and, oh, you haven't played Sundance, so I can't talk to you. Or you don't know such and such. You don't have five celebrities in your cell phone. So, you know, and that whole thing that goes on behind the scenes. So I just wanted to create a place where every topic's open. Everybody's welcome. Come back again tomorrow if you want, to review a film that you watched, a DVD you watched tonight. So we've created this. So that's why I really was interested when I read what you were doing about throwing your own thing together, because I basically just did this because I got tired of dealing with editors. And I just thought, well, not to be an egomaniac, and I'd never call myself the boss, but I just thought, If I'm running the show, then I don't have to worry about an editor bringing his agenda or saying, you should have asked. I'm sure, you know, you don't have to say anything, but I mean, I had editors who would ask me to share stuff that, like, a known Oscar nominee, like, said this is off the record. And they would get mad at me that I had stuff off the record that I wouldn't share. And I was like, this is really interesting. Like, so you just want to be able to have a cool article, and then I never get to have a chance in hell of ever interviewing this person again? Or you know, so, and you know how small this town is. And so now we'll go back to Alicia, who I'm very grateful that she emailed me and introduced us, because I love the idea of just a lot of the things I've been hearing you say. I love subversive stuff. I love kind of going against the grain. I mean, that's why we don't censor the show. We don't have anyone telling us what, you know, ask Steven this or don't. And I just think to have the, you know, the guts to just say, hey, you know what? I want to have a film festival that's for filmmakers, and I'm not going to have 150 that, you know, ask their grandma for a check and grandma gives some of her social security up so they can apply. And that's really, really cool. And of course we can speak briefly on Dances with Films. I've covered it the last 3 years. That's always a brilliant film festival. I always say the most awful movie there is great.
They're really
what was your, as a festival director, if you want to share, that made you think Creed Moria?
Well, you know, what was interesting about Creed Moria, you know, when I was doing this film festival article, here was a movie that got into both Cinequest and Dances with Films and won the Audience Award. And when I was doing the article, and I'm realizing just how hard that is, you know, it got into the two out of the three best festivals that charge submission fees, program people who have paid submission fees, to get into both of those and then to win audience awards at both, like, I knew from all my research, this is a much better movie than probably anything that's playing at Sundance this year. You know, I mean, that is a really impossible thing to do, what this movie did. And then did the same thing at Brooklyn. And I just thought, you know, based on my research of the movies that I surveyed that had paid submission fees, this was one of the two best movies. This is one of the two movies that had the best run, the other being Embers. But this is one of the two movies that had the best run despite the obstacles of not having any connections, not getting waivers to apply to film festivals, et cetera. So I wanted to highlight that because this is a movie that, you know, is probably, you know, in another world with better connections and so forth, probably, you know, would be distributed widely and probably get nominated for something. And so I didn't want it to be forgotten, you know, so I wanted to help, you know, spread the word about this. You know, we all like discovering things, you know, and you would discover something that's like under the radar, it's so good, you know, you want to help spread the word about it.
Oh, right. I mean, film festivals, it's so tough when you find those films and you just think, you know, God, if Robert De Niro walked through the door, this would be on Netflix next month, but this is going to have a great festival run and maybe get VOD for a week. And you just know it's a gem.
If Creed Moria had played at Sundance, it would have sold for $1 million, you know. It would have had great distribution.
Oh, definitely.
But that's not the case, you know. And that's, you know, because Cinequest and Dance with Films are definitely two of the best film festivals in the country, but very few movies that premiere at Cinequest get picked up for distribution. And I don't mean that as a knock on Cinequest. Cinequest is a great, great, incredibly well-curated film festival. But, you know, it's just kind of a shame that the places we get picked up for distribution, you know, Tribeca and Sundance, you know, don't feature many movies, if any at all, from the blind submission pile. You know, the one exception is South by Southwest, you know, because South by, not perfect, 100% of the movies that I surveyed that played there had paid a submission fee. So it's not perfect, but 50% is way better than Tribeca or Sundance or Toronto, you know, the other big prestige festivals. I mean, of the prestige festivals, you know, South by Southwest is the only one that's making any effort at all unless you count Slam Dance, which of course is also very prestigious and doesn't give any waivers, you know.
Well, I always forget. When is South by Southwest again? I don't know why. I'm just trying to blank.
South by Southwest, I think, is in it's in early March. It follows pretty closely.
Okay.
It's like 2 months.
That's right.
2 months and a half after Sundance.
That's right. Well, I just a quick note on Creed Moria for all of you for the listeners. I won't go into review it because we did review it on this show, and it was the director Alicia Slimmer who was kind enough to introduce Mr. Stephen Elliott and I. And you guys really gotta go check out this panel and this other film that Stephen has mentioned. And Creed Moria is just one of those where you just, I compared it to Juno because I remember Simmons wasn't, you know, huge on the map except Spider-Man, but we still didn't give him the respect he deserved. You know, Ellen Page obviously hadn't really broke yet. Allison Janning, you know, after The West Wing, what could she really do after winning 6 Emmys out of 7 years? Michael Cera was kind of the most legit person in Juno. I mean, Jason Bateman had been off the map. So I just remember when I saw Juno being like, this is just something great and special, and it didn't just get made because it's Ivan Reitman's son. All due respect to Jason Reitman. I love Jason Reitman's films. And I told Alicia that. I said, you know, I just kept thinking Juno the whole time. I just kept thinking of this movie that has all these people in it that I could see breaking out and being in, you know, becoming has no, like you said, it's sell at Sundance for a minute. Like, this, I feel like Steph would be Ellen Page if had this played at some of the festivals you mentioned. And so we really want to make sure that you guys support this festival. And Creed Moria did do that was something that kind of, when their PR rep contacted me and I saw that they had won CineQuest, I thought, well, that's a pretty big thing. And then when I saw they were in Dances with Films, I thought, okay, well, this is cool. I'll take a look at it. And I saw a screener, and then I got to see it again on the big screen. And it was just, and then, of course, you know how just wonderful and gracious Alicia is with how great Creed Moria is. I expected, you know, some kind of, you know, don't talk to me or I'm hip and cool because I'm at Dance of the Films. And, you know, she was totally kind and spent time talking with my mother, and it was a really fantastic experience. So, you know, thank you for continuing to support that film. And what you're doing for filmmakers is just awesome. I mean, I think as you've explained this more, pardon me, I'm really amped and I'm trying not to talk too fast because what you've explained to me is like exactly what we're doing with the show. We wanted to say, we can give you press. We're in a bunch of countries. We're in a bunch of cities. We're in film hubs. We have guests from all over. You don't have to win Sundance to get on our show. And so that's why I just love what you're doing. So, you know, we want to really say that we respect what you're doing and how you're giving back to filmmakers and giving them a chance to play in a festival and be shown. And, the fruit of their labor gets to be enjoyed. So we have an idea of the panel. Can you tell us who's on the panel?
There's two panels. The first is How to Festival, a panel about film festivals with Josh Mandel from Slam Dance and Leslie Scallon from Dances with Films, and Frances Levy from Moonface Feminist Film Festival. We're going to talk about programming film festivals and, you know, what you can do and how that works, at least for certain festivals. And that's at 3:30. And then at 7, there's a – 7? Yeah, 7. At 7, there's the Life in the Art – Into Art, which is a panel about when your books become movies, and it features Jerry Stahl, who wrote Come at Midnight, and Janet Fitch, who did White Oleander and Paint It Black, and Anthony Swofford, who wrote Jarhead, Evan Wright, who did Generation Kill, and me, you know, I wrote The Adderall Diaries, talking about, you know, the process of having your book turn into a movie, and, you know, who owns the story, and what does it mean to be represented, to have your literary work represented on the big screen?
Oh, I'm sorry. I had one question. And again, I'm asking it, like I told you earlier, it's not about celebrity or big name or big shows. My father is a Marine, a Vietnam veteran. My brother is a Marine that did tours in Iraq. And my little cousin is a Marine, and I have an uncle that's a Marine. So I just wanted to say that's for any audience members, I know it's out there on DVDs. I see it occasionally in libraries. It's like a Band of Brothers, but for the Iraq War. It's a very superb work. I obviously hold an attachment to it because my brother did some tours over there, and Marines have that camaraderie where they're always Marines. So even if you can just come to this panel to hear what these writers have to say, you know, take the time to thank somebody who put energy into the Marines. I'm very big on working with veterans, and I didn't mean to go off topic there, Stephen, but I feel our veterans just deserve the utmost respect. So please make sure, if you haven't heard it, when, by just hearing the name Generation Killed, know that it's a very important piece of work for history and veterans. Well, this sounds like this sounds like a, like you were saying, the work, and we know the work. From film festivals, it sounds like you've actually managed to put a 3 or 4 day festival in one day. Because
yeah,
this is like, I mean, because I'm already like, in a good way, not the way people say they're exhausted. I'm already like the Generation Kill writer, like, you know, someone who does that much for veterans, and like, these programmers of that cool festival that I'm going to attend next year. And like, that's a really cool thing that you're exposing audiences to all of it. Cause I think, every festival has that niche. Some is just to make the deal. Some is to have fun. Some are to, you know, you see old friends, or, you know, the programmers, or, you know, the PR rep, so you love going back to that festival. And so this, I am really excited to hear that you're doing it. And and I think that there's such a value in, sorry, I'm just one sec. There's such a value that your festival is bringing to the festival game, because I cover short festivals, I cover known festivals, I cover middle festivals, I cover some that are only in their, you know, fifth year, some that are in their 20th year, cover festivals in multiple states. So just what you're telling me, you've done a really superb job of kind of creating a gumbo of what festivals are.
Well, now we just have to, you know, we have to get the people out, you know? So that's the thing.
Yeah, you know, you're making me want to cut out a family dinner here, Stephen.
Yeah,
I'm like,
you know,
you're really pulling on my heartstrings here. I believe in loving where you're at the moment, but I know I will be eating dinner thinking, why am I eating dinner with my sister? This is you mentioned that movie. I wanted to ask you if you could share a little bit of the synopsis. I want to make sure that I heard it right. It was called The Embers.
Embers, yeah, Embers is a great movie. Yeah, you should check it out. It's actually premiering a week after our film festival at the ArcLight. So you should look into that movie too.
And is that just spelled E M B E R S?
Yeah.
Okay. Since we're supporting the films and we want to get people out here, let's. I'll just. If you don't mind, Stephen, I'll mention their website. I know Creed Moria, you can Google and a bunch of stuff will pop up. Okay, never mind. Sorry. Don't Google it. A band will come up. But ArcLight, for those of you that don't know, our listeners outside of Los Angeles, is right there smack on Sunset. It's part of the Cinerama Dome, which I know all of you have seen. That infamous photo of the line of Star Wars around the block and Chewbacca in front of a dome movie theater. The ArcLight is a theater they built on the side, and it's actually underground. Speaking of Slam Dance, Slam Dance Club shows some of their films there. And
Slam Dance is presenting the movie Embers.
Oh, okay, yeah, because I was going to say, when I saw Art of the Prank, it was part of Slam Dance Club at the ArcLight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then they were taking it on to Chicago, has a Slam Dance Club screening. So small world, because I'm planning on attending Slam Dance for the first time in January. So that's cool that you're picking films from there. My mentor told me it was such a great festival and she had such a wonderful time. So I just thought, okay, well, now that we're moving into covering some out-of-state festivals, let's check out that one. Is there anything, what I always like to ask the guests, if they want to discuss it, and this is just like a 3 or 4 minute segment, what keeps you influenced that's not movies or writing? Like, do you have a favorite band you have to hear every week? Or do you have a, you know, is there something that's like your oxygen?
Yeah, you know, I always listen to the band Noveler, which is like the band I was listening to while I was writing the script for After Adderall. It's kind of weird, awesome, ambient, I don't even know what to call it, art rock. I guess I listen to them a lot. I bicycle everywhere, and I also take a lot of time offline. So I leave my computer and my phone at home, and I have like an old word processor, you know, that can't get online. I just go in my notebook and I go for walks. That's really important to me, just to get a good amount of time not connected.
Oh, that's great. I love that you're saying that. I went to Vancouver last September for a friend's wedding, my film school buddy, and my phone didn't work. I didn't bring my laptop, and because you're saying it's something that you do that's your oxygen. There, I came back just like, you know, ready to write 2 shorts and ready to record 100 podcasts and, you know, ready to run to Montana. It was just like, there was something so weird about just Thursday night to Monday morning of not talking business, not returning an email. It was just so fantastic. It I love that you brought that up, because I think it should be recommended to artists more. I know we have to return calls, and those of us who, well, I mean, those of us who like to maintain our reputation, return calls and emails, and but sorry about that. And is there anything else? Because that's a really great one, by the way.
I don't know. I mean, that's, you know, that's all of it, really.
Okay. Well, I wanted to say that I had a great time speaking with you today, and I would drop you an email. I'd love to hear how the festival went, and we sincerely, our entire production team, we always discuss guests and what's going on. We wish this event the best, and the filmmakers, and we hope great connections are made, and we hope more great art is born from the people you've brought together, and that the education is spread through the panels, and this is just a really, really cool thing you're doing.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, this is, I want to say that I hope this is, you know, that we're talking about year two, you know, enjoy today,
yeah.
But I really want to see this go, for you. With that, if there's anything you'd like to say in the closing moments of the show, feel free, floor is yours.
Well, I just hope everybody, you know, comes out. It's also, you know, it's also the world premiere of After Adderall, my movie, which I know you're, I think you're doing a review on it, but, you know, it's a weird movie. It's a movie about James Franco making a movie about me and seeing, you know, that whole process. And so I'm really excited for that because, you know, part of the reason we were doing this, we realized it was actually cheaper and easier maybe to do our own film festival than to participate in the current system as it's functioning.
Okay. And remember, everyone, to check out, that was Film Festival The Swindle?
The Great Film Festival Swindle.
Okay, The Great Film Festival Swindle. Article that Mr. Stephen Elliott wrote about the film festival system. And again, we respect all festivals, and we're not, none of the, what we discussed today was to diss anyone. Great. Thank you for examining that too, because I'm in a position where I can never really like discuss that because I'm usually at a festival. So it's like, so that's a really great topic. And I'm glad that spawned in our conversation today. And stick around. We will be, as we wrap up with Stephen here, I will be reviewing his film After Adderall, and so stick around. Again, thank you for your time, and I will get this show to you as soon as it is ready.
Great. Thanks, man.
All right, you have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye.
Bye. We always appreciate the time of guests. That was a really cool, that was a topic that came out of left field. These are the shows that are why we do it. Aside from that, we do it to support filmmakers, and, you know, we do not profit off the guest. We do not, when we've had celebrities on, we do not do this or that or pimp, whatever. But I do want to do a quick review here of Stephen Elliott's film After Adderall. He sent me a screener. It's a running time of 80 minutes. There is some nice actors in there that you'll see. I'm not going to reveal because I want you to go see the movie. And as he said, Stephen Elliott said, it's a movie about James Franco making a movie of his book. So there is some great, interesting autobiographical moments that I, of course, did not know as I was watching the film. And now that I've spoken with Steven, a lot of things in the film are even stronger to me. And that's like such a blessing when you get to talk with the filmmaker, the director. But it is, first of all, it's obviously a well-written film because, as you heard, Steven has written books and screenplays that were made into movies, and he's made his own movies that he wrote. What I want to say about it is that it gives you a very unique look into what he was discussing about somebody making a movie of your life. It gives you some kind of a look into the film business, kind of if you, it's not about the film business, but specifically, but if you like those movies, you're gonna like that even more. For some reason, I kept thinking of Fellini's 8 and a half, but I know that's not what the specifics of the movie were. But if you like 8 and a half and kind of that art house edge, that technically wasn't art house. I mean, films like that created art house, but and I just use Fellini's 8 and a half because the main character has this great. It's just so well fleshed out. You can really see. I don't know. I'm sorry. Sometimes it's almost. I think it's just like that saying: some things are best left unsaid. It's like when you see really well drawn out characters, it's like, why break them down? Why explain the nuances? Because at this show, we're not critics. We're actually filmmakers, the team that runs this show. So we don't do this to criticize and knock films but I would say that this is a great piece of work, and it's wonderful because it has a personal element to it, which most filmmakers don't do. When you make a film, obviously who you are seeps into it, but this had kind of a more of a statement to it. And, you know, I don't want to get into spoiling any of the plot. He mentioned, you know, how interesting. Think for a sec, if James Franco wanted to make a book of your life, or wanted to make a movie of your work, and then, you know, just think as a human, if anybody wanted to make your work and something that was personal to you. So that was a really unique thing that I wasn't expecting, because I didn't get bombarded by the cast list. I didn't get things thrown at me that usually would try to lure people into viewers. I was just asked to watch a screener. So that made it a nice movie-going experience, and that made it, pardon me, I got to drink some water. It's so hot today. The format here is like we're in a coffee shop talking movies. So I always invite guests to have a cup of tea with them or water. Anyway, so it was a very valuable piece of work, and it was entertaining. And I just liked that it was unique and different. It just slightly leans towards art house, and that's not remotely in a derogatory way. It always frustrates me when people say, oh, I don't like foreign films, and then they start saying the films they like, and they mention something that's a French film, or, oh, I don't like art house, but then they loved American Beauty. That movie was so art house. If you really broke down certain elements, it just hit a chord because everybody's fucked up. Pardon my language. Well, not pardon my language, but in a review, I apologize. So check this out. And again, the world premiere, he said 7:30 p.m. I'm sorry that I screwed that up if I got the wrong 7 or 7:30. This is going to be at the Rumpus Lo-Fi Los Angeles Film Festival. Google it. It's going to be this Saturday, July 30th. There's great panels. There's panels with festival programmers, writers. You get to see Creed Moria, wonderful film. Support this new gem that's going to be playing at the Arclight with the Slam Dance Club, the Embers. And then you get to see After Adderall, which I would definitely give a solid 4.5 out of 5 stars. And it's something that I'm going to hopefully get a chance to rewatch now that I've spoken with the director. So, you know, take these opportunities to support filmmakers and art that are not, you know, what everyone tells you to see, because, you know, just we won't get into how music's in danger, film is in danger, art is in danger, and we're losing our sense of just so many things are out of whack right now. So I'm going to leave it with great film, and please support this festival, the Rumpus Lo-Fi Los Angeles Film Festival. Tell your LA friends, your LA family, for our Hawaii listeners and my Hawaii buddies, if you know anyone in Los Angeles, I know you know people in Los Angeles, please tell your LA buddies and associates. This sounds like it's going to be a great event. Take care as always, and I close with, no matter what you're going to do today, make sure and watch a good movie. Aloha.